Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Kiwi Talks. My guests today are important cogs in the machine at GOG, the digital distribution platform of the future, who are on a mission to preserve older video games and make them accessible for future play. Here with me today is Peter Gimp, Marcin Pazinski, and Adam Zielkowski. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for having us. Yep.
Yeah. Thank you for taking time out. So, to start off, a bit of an icebreaker, which is a two-part question. And the first part is for Adam and the other two can chime in. So, Adam, why is Final Fantasy VII the best game ever? And why isn't it on GOG yet?
But it is a very good question that shouldn't really need an answering, because this is really the best game that was ever created. For me, it was the first game that actually showed that video games can be much more than just pure entertainment. They can tell a significant story, they can show you significant music, and have very interesting mechanics that will, make you want to play the game over and over again. And by the way, those are Final Fantasy VII inspired jewelry. This is mana, this is confused, this is all. Okay, and for your second question.
Really, but if I remember correctly, the Final Fantasy VII was the last one without mini games like Blitzballs, car games. Anything else? Just the racing.
No, it had
chocobo racing.
No, it had chocobo racing. It had snowboarding.
But you didn't have to collect stuff through entire game just to get more experience, right?
Well, because you had to collect those.
Yes. But for me, it was like the last Final Fantasy that was like all for me, because I'm not really fond of card games or sport games. So Blitzball and that was something that set me off the newer ones. So this is the last proper game, just fighting RPG.
Yeah,
just tough questions, moral choices.
Yeah,
no sport.
FIFA, yes. Okay, for your second question, I guess it would be best for Marcin to.
Yeah, the lightest guy.
Final Fantasy VII is clearly one of our highest wishlisted game on our dream list. Right, I think right now it has close to 100,000 votes. It's definitely there in a top five, I want to say.
No wonder.
Without checking, it's the dream list really. Gives us a clear priority list. So you can be sure that we are working on all of those games from the top of our dream list. And we've made progress on some of those titles. So fingers crossed, you will see some of them on GOG releasing soon. So maybe some Final Fantasy will be one of them.
Because I would imagine that dealing with the Japanese publishers would be quite difficult because usually they are very pro DRM, right?
Yes, that is very, very much true. However, I'm happy to say that this approach is shifting. So the Japanese companies seem to realize the value of, you know, releasing the games, especially their older titles, without any DRM, for the purpose of, you know, of, you know, game preservation, of, you know, keeping those games alive. So in the recent years, from Capcom, as an example, we've managed to release the Resident Evil games 1, 2, and 3, the classical versions, Dino Crisis 1 and 2, and recently Breath of Fire 4. So I want to say, like 3-4 years ago, this wouldn't be possible. All of the Japanese companies seem to be out of reach if it came to like releasing games without any form of DRM. But yeah, right now Konami is here, Capcom is releasing game on GOG, SNK it's on GOG for a long time, Sega with Yakuza games, mm-hmm. or like a Dragon, how they are called in Japan. So yeah, there has been a significant progress in that area in the last few years, and I'm happy to say that we keep the ball rolling, so to speak. So there will be more games from Japanese publishers released on GOG, hopefully soon.
So how do you convince them to get on board with this? How long does it take?
Well, it took a lot of time and effort to get to that point. So it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, because there are different reasons why they didn't want to do it, release a game DRM-free. One was the culture one, because it was kind of viewed that if you release something DRM-free, that means that you do not value your work.
Right.
So it was a kind of like a cultural thing. The other thing was obviously piracy. So I am releasing games DRM-free, so I am helping out pirates. So the second argument was you could logically fight with it, meaning that we had a lot of numbers that we could have, that we shown, that proved that releasing games at DRM-free is absolutely not impacting yourselves in a negative way. This is not always true, but in terms of most of the games, especially back catalog games, this is true. And we have, you know, many partners from all over the world that are releasing games on GOG for many, many years and keep releasing them. And they see the numbers, they see the impact GOG release that is DRM-free has on their sales on their other platforms. And in my pitch deck, so to speak, about DRM, I have plenty of quotes from, you know, the biggest publishers are there that are working with us with GOG for many, many years now. And they checked that numerous times, the impact GOG DRM-free release has on their sales on other platforms. And there is none. And, you know, wow. All of those Japanese companies that started to release games on GOG were able to verify that. And they keep releasing games. So that is a very, very strong proof that, hey, there is absolutely nothing to worry about in that regard. And on top of that, you are actually helping game preservation. You are helping to preserve your legacy as a company, you know, by releasing those games in a DRM-free form, meaning that people can, you know, can store them, can, you know, have them installed locally, like download in their collections and so on and so forth. So there is a huge, this game preservation positive aspect of releasing a game DRM-free that is extremely valuable. And especially nowadays, like the gamers really value that freedom the DRM-free gives. And you know, by doing so, it creates a lot of this positive vibe, positive PR, so to speak, for all of those big companies that probably a couple of years ago wouldn't care that much.
But I think it's also connected to the way the games changed. Like, if you think about it, the games age slower and slower. You could take a game from a decade ago, like Witcher 3 or Cyberpunk, which is like 7 years ago, I think, and they still look amazing. So if you don't do the DRM, then people can enjoy and play your game for many, many, many years in the future. So this is changing, and we see that the game preservation is now becoming not only a thing, but also a business strategy when you keep your games alive, to keep the community alive, because without the community, you want the success of the next installment, the remake, remaster, next part of the franchise will be much, much easier to achieve if you have a living, vibrant community that still plays and is hyped about your game. And also, you could read what they think, how this game aged in terms of mechanics, of gameplay loops that are in it. So there are many, many positives. And the game preservation as a business strategy is becoming more and more viable, I would say.
Yes, from a business perspective, if a game is DRM-free, then it's easier to maintain. And as Piotr just said, like, games right now are aging very, very slowly. Mm-hmm. Like, Witcher 3 is 10 years old. Fallout 4 is 10 years old, right? And if Witcher 3 was released yesterday, it would be probably still praised for absolutely amazing graphics, right? It's practically speaking, it's still a modern game. But that game has always been DRM-free. But this is true for many games that were released in the last decade. And their maintenance, their technical maintenance becomes very important from a business perspective, because if you maintain their quality, you are able to still sell it, obviously, right? And DRM-free approach certainly helps with that, because you have one less variable to worry about. That's another argument for having the game DRM free.
There'd be a cost with it as well, though, right? That would make publishers maybe a little bit hesitant, because obviously it can cost a lot of money to try and bring these up to scratch. And then if they're super old games and you're selling them for like $6 or whatever it is it going to be viable to the publisher? Because you have to make it viable for them, correct?
Yeah. This is actually one of the problems the GOG is solving, because we can create those DRM-free versions relatively easy. Meaning that we have all of the experience, all of the tools, all of the know-how that we've developed over a decade and a half, practically speaking, as long as GOG exists. So we can do it relatively easy, like to remove DRM, even without the source code, wherever the DRM there was, and, you know, create a version that is like a sunset version, the final version of the game that has been built in a way that makes it a bit easier to maintain. So this is something GOG is specializing in. But yeah, it's at the end of the day, it needs to be worth it. So what we are doing at GOG is basically we are lowering the price of doing that to a level that it makes this whole thing viable from the business perspective. But you are right that a lot of those games are also sold for like $2, right? And this is my personal opinion and not GOG, that those games are, if they are maintained properly, they are worth, a lot of them are worth much more. It will be also, if they are have a bit higher price point, I'm not talking about like a $10 or $20 for a 10-year-old game, or 10 euro plus game, but not $2, then it makes it easier for the publishers and companies like GOG to maintain them, because we are able to commit more resources into doing it properly.
Makes sense.
Because I think that if you have like an older game with proven quality, thousands of gamers that enjoyed it, and it costs like $5-6, it's worth more than trying to risk with a new release that might be not that good, right? And here you have a golden classics, golden games that you know that are worth time. And there are so much games, for sure there are some classics or mega hits from the previous times that you weren't able to play when they launched, right?
So, yeah.
Because of that, the discoverability problem and overcrowded of oversaturation of the market, these games with proven quality and proven track record are even worth more to gamers because they know that they're risking less by buying them.
Yeah, and this is actually a low price point is actually a problem that we needed to take into consideration while we were trying to release on GOG. Many of the titles that are currently available on Steam and the quality there might be not something that we would like to release on GOG. But the problem is that those games on that platform are sold at like 90% off, right? So we estimated the amount of work we would need to put into the game to have it, you know, fix all of the issues and have it basically released on...
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
In our game preservation program, in the quality that this program demands. So, you know, all of the modern hardware needs to be supported, widescreen, you know, all of the functionalities and so on and so forth. Like, yeah, minimalizing the game, alt-tab needs to work. That's a...
for me,
for a PC gamer, that's probably one of the most important features that need to work.
Yeah.
Borderless window and so on and so forth. And, you know, we are looking at those games and, you know, so... We estimate the amount of work and we see that that game would be sold for $1.80 at GOG because the publisher keeps selling it at 90% off. So this is how many units we would need to sell to actually break even. And sometimes it's basically that calculation is not looking good. So this is actually one of the things that we need to take into consideration why we are, you know, committing all of those resources to maintain those games in a way that, you know, it's in a way that, like, is expected from a modern gamer, from a modern PC user.
Yeah, of course. So how does the legal framework work, I suppose, in terms of all this stuff, because you've got all these different countries that have different laws. So how do you deal with that from a legal perspective?
From a legal perspective, this is, this can be a very, very complicated topic. And this is a lot of times, this is like the 80% of my work is figuring out the legal stuff. Because you know, sometimes it's easy, meaning that, you know, we know how the publisher is. He has all of the rights. All of the agreements are basically structured in a way that are not having any ambiguities, so to speak. So, okay, they have the right. We can if we sign a deal with them, we can release that game on GOG. That is the easiest part. However, with those older titles, and the older the title is, the more complicated it gets. The rights are split, meaning that sometimes you have a situation in which, you know, there was a company and the company got bankrupt, and parts of the rights were bought by one entity, parts of the rights by other entity. And sometimes the paper trail is not that clear. So we need to do some digging. What's going on there? Who has the full rights? Recently, even last week, we had a situation in which we know that there are two parties that have the rights because they split, right? And the one party can prove that, and the other party can't find the agreement.
Oh my gosh.
So we are 90% sure that they have the rights. They just cannot prove it. So you have weird situations like that. This can be solved with... There are ways to solve the situation like that, but it requires a lot of effort. You know, with another good example is many of the Japanese games, because of the law is structured there, are done in a way that the voice actors and the music in the game, the contracts are signed per platform.
What? So if,
Exactly that.
That's so crazy.
It is. From our point of view, it's crazy. But yeah, in many cases, when we are releasing Japanese games, we need to renew the license for a voice actor, for a piece of music in the game, for GOG, even though the game is available on Steam.
Yeah.
Because the contracts are usually defined per platform. So a GOG is another platform, so they need to sign a separate contract.
Oh my God. That sounds like...
That was my initial reaction as well.
That would take ages to sort through, I imagine.
Sometimes it takes a long time.
Yeah.
There are a couple of games that from Japanese publishers that we waited for that particular thing for almost a year to get sold.
That's crazy. You're blowing my mind right now, honestly. That seems like such a backwards way of doing things, but I guess if that's just the way they do it, that's the way they do it.
Yeah, it's the way they do it, and to some extent, if I understand this correctly, it was connected to how the law was structured back then.
Yeah.
So all of the artists had certain... there was a baseline for all of the agreements with artists. Right now, I think it changed. I'm not sure just to what extent.
Yeah, fair enough. So how did the GOG preservation program even come about?
Oh, it's a funny story. It's a funny story.
We have only funny stories.
Because we always think that our games are work preserved and it's all good on our side.
Yeah.
And once we checked and we discovered that while they are working and are okay, but they're not working as good as we would like.
We're doing some research and looking in the random games that we have in our catalog and seeing if they actually are like launchable for Windows 10 or 11. And there were like, I think, 30% of instances.
Yeah,
it didn't. So we're like, okay, we should do something about it.
Yeah, it's GOG was always about game preservation, right?
Yeah.
And we like to think that we are doing a pretty good job in this. Because, you know, all of the games that were released on GOG, they were really, really thoroughly tested. Like the RQA department is doing amazing job here. They were sitting on GOG and you know, we look at those games that we released just a couple of years ago in some examples. And we were very surprised to see that those games really deteriorated in terms of their compatibility with modern operating systems.
Yeah, mostly having to do with changes at Windows 10 and 11, like they removed from the newer Windows versions. So
So we looked at it and okay, something needs to be done with this, because we are clearly not where we are supposed to be. If our goal is to be the best platform in the world for back catalog games, not only for classical games, but practically speaking for all back catalogs. So we needed to go through. So what we are doing now is going through our entire back catalog on GOG, thousands of titles that we prepared the builds of, and we are rechecking them. We are doing researching what is happening with them. We are looking at the most recent support tickets and so on and so forth, and practically speaking, refreshing all of them. And all of those games that did get that new refresh, so to speak, get a label that they are right now in the preservation program. Because what that also means is that those games are right now connected to a pipeline that will make their future preservation for us much, much easier. Because we are monitoring what is happening with them way better. We are able to react way faster. And they have been, the builds that are there are made using our most recent technologies, so to speak. That is way easier for us to maintain on a scale. So this is a process that currently is happening on GOG. We are going through our entire catalog. As Adam just said, like only like 30, maybe 40% of the games that we are checking does not have any issues. Mm. And some of the issues were created by, the passage of time, meaning new operating systems, new hardware, and so on and so forth. And some of the issues are actually related to the different level of quality you were happy with back in the day versus now. Like that famous Altstab. Like that it was a problem with many, many, many classical games that we released on GOG. So whenever there was a problem with Altstab, with minimalizing the game, we just blocked that function. That is not acceptable anymore.
Yeah, we have to go back switch it back.
So yeah. it is possible, but right now we are the biggest entity in the gaming industry. We're the biggest actively maintaining the catalog of games because I don't.
We pass the titles, right?
We'll pass it this month.
Our aim.
Oh no, 200 is passed. No, sorry.
So our aim is, I think, around 350 games in the program till the end of the year. So, from the top of my mind, I cannot name any other publisher or entity. Are you frozen?
No.
Oh no, I'm just really, really interested in what you're saying.
At the top of my mind, I cannot name another entity in the gaming industry that actively maintains 200 games.
Over 200 games.
Over 200 games.
Will be an increasing, right?
Yeah, that's the name of a publisher.
I just checked. Technically, it's 196 SKUs, but a lot of those SKUs are actually bundles of games.
Yeah.
Like Might and Magic 1 to 6.
Yeah, Might and Magic 1 to 6.
It just counted as one SKU and it's six games.
Because we launched with 100 games in November, just to make a clear statement that we are like serious about this. And now we are slowly moving into getting to 350 until the end of the year.
This is our
goal.
Okay, that's the goal.
Yeah. Wow. And then obviously moving forward and adding more.
Yeah, we are we are scaling this up, so to speak.
So how many QA people do you have working for you?
Adam?
<That's just me. laughs> So this this might be surprising, but we are actually a rather small team. But you know, with the know-how and the engagement to the titles, we can do stuff faster and more.
But Adam's team also developed internal.
Because we can be small because we also developed our own tools that help us very much in like making stuff faster, as Marcin mentioned. So, for instance, we have our own version of DOSBox that not only works as DOSBox is supposed to work, and this basically allows us to port every DOS game that was ever created, but also our DOSBox is the only one that supports cloud saving through our system for all the games that are...
So, the games that were built without internet, now they can to the internet.
You can actually play Lemmings, like, go to the 90 level, then launch on another computer, and then just continue playing. For some other tools that we are using, we have a very very good DirectX wrapper that allows us to translate all the older DirectX API calls into DirectX 10 and 11. So this allows us to quickly port those, quicker port the games like, for instance, Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3, because we can use it and then allow the games to work in the high resolution, having the textures rendering in high resolutions as well. So also like stepping back, like with Breath of Fire, when we released it on, we released the PC version of Breath of Fire 4. And the stuff that this version always had was like the sprites were always anti-aliased. So it wouldn't be like a nice pixel art that you would expect the game to have. But this is how the game was ported to PC back in the time. So now with our DirectX wrapper, we're actually able to tear down this forced anti-aliasing, so you can now play the game as so that it looks closer to the PS1 version. And this was actually something that users asked us to add after we released the game. So yeah, took us a weekend.
Yeah.
You make it sound easy.
Interesting.
I mean, it's not easy, but with the tools that we are developing for 10 years now, it's actually faster. Not easier, but faster.
Next month will be your birthday, 18th? No, 17th.
Yeah.
Next month, probably on the 25th.
Yeah. So
if all goes well.
So we've been doing this for a long time. So we have an internal knowledge and quite unique knowledge how to make the games work. It's funny because I was the journalist back when we started, and I found the old leaflet that said like, your DOS games will be working on Windows XP without problem. And now we are making Windows XP games working on Windows 10, no problem.
Yeah.
But there's always like this game preservation and running older games and newer computers. So we have all the knowledge and skills in-house to make this happen. That's why it sounds so easy when Adam is studying this, but it's not.
Yeah, we try to make it as easy as possible, but obviously there are many instances when we need to actually get into the code. And usually without using source code. So we are just looking at the binaries, figuring out what's
happening. When he's talking about his reverse engineering, it's kind of like you're reading Neuromancer by Gibson, and he's saying, it was so easy to find the structure, and when it's repeating, and then you have an input point, and then you go to the code and figure this stuff out. So like...
Yeah, because for instance, for Silent Hill 4, we recently introduced a fix that added more cutscenes to the PC version that weren't there because the issue was very easy, because basically there were 7 cutscenes that were supposed to be randomly played, but the randomizer only accounted for 4. So the change that we had to do was basically change it from looking into 4 animations, let's say, to 7 animations and just from there. But getting to this line of code to figure out where it is and where we should change it, like, took actually a bigger amount of work.
More than a weekend?
Yeah.
More than a weekend.
that is actually the most difficult, the most complicated thing about game preservation program and what we do here was actually finding a way to make it relatively easy to do. Yeah. However you define it, yes, because it's still a lot of work. But once that work is done, then the hope is that the continuous maintenance of those games will be way easier for us. Because as I mentioned, that we have a lot of those new tools, new systems, pipelines that we can hook up those older games to.
Yeah.
And once that work is done, then the continuous technical preservation of the game should be way, way quicker.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because those tools are basically disconnected from the game. So we actually are updating the tools, not the game itself. So we can keep the code as close to the original as possible.
Right. What about AI technologies? Are you able to utilize that at all to make anything, I suppose, less monotonous or even easier than you try to make it?
Yeah, I'm using AI to proofread my emails.
Yeah, to be honest,
I'm not sure if that counts.
with some of the changes in the industry, we are not like using AI for like the bulk of our work. Because, like, for instance, on Steam, you now have to disclose that you are using AI for anything.
Right. Yeah.
We are mostly like scripting stuff ourselves, like the old way.
Although we are looking in that direction, we are exploring. We are trying to find a way to help.
Yeah, I mean, we use it for research. We don't use it for the.
Oh yeah, it's a great research tool. A great research tool. That is already being used in that capacity. Yeah.
So you need to, for instance, gather all the information. What's wrong with the game? So we have our like crawlers. That go around forums and like PC Gaming Wiki and whatever, and they just compile all the information and send you the report of okay.
But we are looking closely how AI develops. It's crazy fast-paced technology. If you think what they did like a year ago and where they are right now, it's like magic happening. So we do not say no to this.
It's just
the tools are not there yet for us to use, but for sure something will appear in the future, like you could see how fast this movement is growing, right?
Yeah.
Because I would think that the problem is time. You guys have only got so much time. So anything that can help you reduce the time you're doing on one specific task in order to maybe focus on another that needs more time, then that would be the most beneficial.
I think it's true to every game development part of a job, like even all the entertainment production type of it.
Yeah, because if we want to really do it on a scale that we plan to do it, so a couple of thousands of titles in game preservation program, we need to have close to perfect tools to make it viable from the business perspective.
And since more and more games are released each year, so with each year we have more games to add because we'll cross the 10-year like benchmark. So the numbers will only increase for the preservation
And right now the big one on the horizon is certainly Windows 12.
Ah yes.
Yeah, we cannot wait.
For a new set of challenges for us to approach.
One of the surprising publishers that I was quite flabbergasted by that you managed to work with was Sony, in terms of working with them to get their games on GOG. Would that be considered like the Mount Everest of publishers to try and?
I think there's one other from Japan
for now.
like I mentioned before, like all of the Japanese to start working with Japanese companies and start releasing their games on GOG and convince them that we are the right partner to do it. That was difficult, long process with many of the partners that currently, practically speaking, with all of the Japanese companies that are currently on GOG. So Sony was probably not an exception. For me personally, that was certainly one of the biggest milestones.
That's a mic drop, I reckon, personally. That's like flexing. Like, oh yeah, we mean business.
There is one more that I would love. I would love to get on Judy. That would be the my personal mic drop.
Which would be? What would that be? You can't say.
Don't want to jinx it. Yeah,
I probably will both drop the mics.
Yeah. We will drop all of the mics. But yeah, there is one or two big Japanese names that we currently do not have on GOG.
But it's not easy. Yeah, it's not the tough to guess.
Yeah, it's not. It's not a tough guess.
Yeah, I think I have an idea, but
yeah. Probably right.
Not related to talk today.
One of the good things I think that you guys have is like the fact that you have an offline launcher. I have a lot of friends in Australia and they have terrible internet infrastructure. So they love the fact that you guys have an offline launcher. Was that always the plan to have that?
Yeah, that was from the beginning.
That was actually
Before
Galaxy, before everything, yes. The first thing that was on GOG was only those offline launchers. So standalone installers or offline installers, how we are calling them. That has always been a big part of what we are doing here, one of the main values, and that will remain one of the main values. This is not going anywhere ever, because this is one of the core things that...
That's in our DNA.
Yeah. Basically, like the purest form, so to speak, of a DRM-free build is you being able to download the whole game and have an installer like stored locally on your hard drive that already has everything that you need to play the game in it, except of course of the operating system and drivers and whatever. But this is just like a self-contained package with everything that you need to launch the title without internet, without anything.
Yeah, and also the way we develop tools is also so that they do not require our Galaxy client at any point. And that's for obviously cloud saves and achievements. But for instance, our input wrapper that allows us to make older games playable with modern controllers is not in any way connected to Galaxy, like for instance the other platform that uses their input only connecting through the client. So we are 100% offline, and you can play all of the offline games.
Yeah, and all of those and most of those features that are not directly connected to GOG Galaxy client are also present in the offline build. Like the standalone base is like our benchmark. So did we create a version of the game that can be just packaged and played without absolutely any internet connection? Yes. Okay. So therefore, we have a release.
How often do you still get approached with just people out of nowhere saying, "I have the rights to such and such game"?
So it happens from time to time, but right now it's super rare. So I do not recall the last time that has happened, to be perfectly honest. But the famous time that has happened was actually in the beginning years of GOG with System Shock 2.
Yeah.
So this is that is a story that unfortunately happened only once with a game that was like up there, like probably was the most wishlisted game on GOG. And we were trying to get it for practically us since the beginning of the platform, but that it was always eluding us. It seemed like an impossible thing to do. So we kind of maybe not gave up, but lost hope for ever getting on GOG. And out of the blue, we get an email from literally a random guy on the internet saying, "Hey, I have all of those rights. Do you want to release it on GOG at System Shock 2? And that guy was Stephen Kick, the founder of Nightdive. But yeah, so, our initial reaction was
who?
What? This is we call BS on that.
Yeah.
But okay, so send out all of the papers. You know, he sent out everything. We are looking at it. Okay, that seems to be fine. And we had an amazing release together with Stephen Kick at the very beginning of Nightdive.
But I would say that this happening less and less is a good sign, because it shows that the people value and they know that the old IPs and the old games are worth saving. So it's more like a business strategy, not just random things. And you see a lot of remasters, remakes, and games coming back after a certain amount of time. And I think it's amazing. Like, we all see the success that Obligion got. And even if I remember, we were practicing for our presentation of game preservation with Martin some time ago. And we found this report that 2023 was even named the year of the remake and the remaster. So I think it's amazing that the game has this long tail of sales, and they can live for much longer time than they were previously.
That kind of proves that there is still a lot of value in the old stuff.
So. Yeah, and that means that publishers can make these risks and invest in bigger games because they can live longer now.
Yeah. And yeah, I just remember that the news I was reading yesterday, that the old school RuneScape has hit a new record of 240,000 players. People know right now, I don't think they care about graphics. They just care about the gameplay.
But I agree.
If the game is good, it doesn't matter how it looks. Yeah. It doesn't matter that much. Old school RuneScape, I think the game was released originally in like 2004, 5-ish.
Yeah, probably
something like that. It definitely looks like it's a game from the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and it's still, surging in popularity among gamers. So yes, there is value in classic games. There is value in back catalog games.
Yeah.
And it's a matter to preserve that value in a way that makes it still enjoyable.
Yeah, and make it future proof. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somehow we are also saying Hello so like the Magic 3. When I would imagine that right at this point, I think everyone on the planet Earth should have it, because we are saying so much of it.
Yeah. All time bestseller on GOG.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you make a good point about how we've kind of reached a pinnacle in terms of technology. Like, as long as you have the time, resource, and money, you can pretty much make anything you want now.
Mm-hmm.
Technology's kind of peaked. So, in some ways, I guess that would benefit what you guys are doing.
Yeah. I think that technology is not really just, we have so many different editions in different genres, but the visual fidelity of the games is making not that huge leaps in each generation, right, of consoles.
Yeah, not like PS1 to PS2.
The jump from PS1 to PS2 was amazing. From PS2 to PS3 or Xbox 360 with the Intel was amazing. Yeah. But between PS3 and PS4, not so much in terms of visual fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe right now with ray tracing on consoles, but the progress is steadily, right? So there is not that much jump, so you don't see the visual breakthrough like with the new wave of games.
Yeah, but I think kind of agree with the statements. Apologies. That the technology kind of picked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not only from a purely technical point of view, because there are still being improvements being made, but also from a point of view of a gamer. I used, like, 10 years ago, like, there was a new game being released that used, and those some new amazing trees, like with thousands of leaves, and that rendered in real time. That was absolutely jaw dropping, right? I feel that right now, the most gamers do not really care that much about such a things anymore.
I agree.
I mean, they still do.
They do to a certain extent, but yes, it's no way near as much as they used to.
My theory was that the graphics are the things in a game that you stop noticing the earliest.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start playing the game,
yeah. Unless it's in some artistical way, but if it's just like
talking about the amazing artistical graphics,
mm-hmm.
from the purely technical standpoint, if we are going just for photorealism, whatever. This is the thing that, like, a gamer gets bored the quickest.
Mm-hmm.
or
get used to the
start the
stuff. Because I would say that we so what's left is the gameplay, the story. Well, practically speaking, the game itself. And if it's good, then of course.
But isn't this connected to the engines? Like we see, like Unreal Engine Dominance and hence Fatigue. Like games made by Unreal Engine has a certain look, and if a game isn't being done unlike
Unreal
Engine, so you can see like Death Stranding 2, right? Different engine, different rendering style. You see the differences, or like Sucker Punch, Ghost of Tsushima, and Ghost of Yotei, which are not Unreal Engine, if I'm correct.
I mean, maybe, but you can definitely say if anything is made in Unity, because there is this certain. Like aesthetics,
so I would say
with Unity games,
and the Unreal Engine game, because you can see that argument in the press from I would say Xbox 360 era when Unreal Engine 4 was introduced and everything was done on Unreal Engine 4. People say, okay, this game looks like that game because they share the common language.
They probably also share some of the assets.
Yeah,
makes sense.
But nothing is like because of that you don't see the graphics.
Yeah,
but
because the game, every game looks the same. Yeah, that's a
good, similar. Similar.
No, I don't think I agree with that. But not the same. Yeah, it's similar. Sorry,
it's the same but different.
same but different.
So similar.
same.
You can see similarities when you watch Summer Games Fest or the Game Awards. You can see similarities with some of the trailers, you know, in terms of the artistic style, or even in terms of the genre now as well. So,
that is very, very much true. Yeah. You definitely see the similarities. But yeah, even in the same engine, we're talking about Unreal, right? Expedition was made in Unreal. However, this game is absolutely fabulous.
But this is basically what I meant with the artistic spin.
Yeah,
because this game has actually an artistic spin that there's like they are playing with colors, they are playing with like the paint dripping and stuff like that. So it's the same, but that's the way.
Yeah,
it's different.
Yeah.
Also amazing.
This is what makes the difference, right?
Yeah.
The artistic aspect of it, not the technical one.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have a few questions from my followers that I thought I'd pose to you. Maybe you can answer them. Maybe you cannot. Maybe you'll be like, no comment. You can. That can be like your pass if it's
okay.
Something you can't answer.
Oh, man. Okay. We are ready.
Okay. You're ready? All right.
Ourselves for input.
Okay. So the first one is from Topham. He asks, what has financially enabled your company to give away so many free games through Twitch, Amazon Prime?
With a lot of the giveaways, and this is true for, I think, for Prime, for us, for Epic, like the primary reason to do a giveaway is the number of users that are redeeming those games and the number of users that... a lot of times this is the first interaction with the platform.
So speaking in terms of
marketing, from a business perspective, giving away a free game, whatever it is, a giveaway on GOG or on Prime that is giving away GOG keys, it's primarily the reason is the new users that are discovering GOG for the first time.
Yeah,
so if that percentage of users is big enough, then it makes sense for us to do it.
And it's a common for all internet platforms. It's called the cost of acquisition. So you can acquire user by marketing it on Facebook, Twitter, Google, and or you could do giveaways to attract people to come to you and set up an account, right? So this is standard for any internet platform. Netflix does it, any trial period is the same, right?
There's more caveats to this because this is like the baseline, because a lot of times those are like more complex deals that giveaway is just a part of it. So it can be way more complicated than just users, but in general, from the business perspective, we find a way to do it.
Yeah, and just to like, it's not like part of the answer from GOG point of view, but marketing standpoint. Sometimes the publishers give away their old games just to increase the interest in the title, like when they plan something in advance for it, right? or they want more people to get connected to the brand. You could see this happening all over platforms, franchises, publishers. They sometimes give away all the titles just to make people reconnect with it.
Well, it can get really complicated.
Yeah. Anyways, standard marketing activities in the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. Good answer. All right.
Thank you.
Next one. Next one is from Marvel Light V. Would they ever look into recreating physical boxes and game manuals for purchase?
Oh, man.
Yes.
The proper PR question, the answer is, it's a logical step for us, right?
It's not a secret. It's not like a business secret or whatever. Yes, we've looked at that direction many, many times. And my personal hope is that one time we'll be able to find a way to do it properly from the logistical business perspective, licensing, and so on and so forth. The problem is that this is a complicated thing to do. Because we don't, and one of the main reasons is that we do not own the rights to those games, right? We are only distributing them. So at the end of the day, we will need to do a lot of the work that would need to be normally done by the publisher. And in many cases, they would need to mirror that work anyway to figure out, okay, do we own still the rights to all of those assets that came that needs to be used? Do we still own the rights to the manual? Do we include like the original manual in the game that in the way that it looked like originally, or we are creating something new? Is it just the box or contents in it? It gets extremely complicated very, very fast in a situation in which we do not own those games. We do not own we do not own the IP rights.
Yeah, and that's right.
So for us to be able to do it, it would, again, needs to be viable from the business perspective for not only us, but also the publishers to look into this, get all of the approvals, you know, start up the whole process, you know, get all of the green lights from all of the departments and so on and so forth.
Not to mention...
It was difficult for us to create a scenario in which this all makes sense from a business perspective.
The logistics problems, print on demand problems, the print quality, sending stuff. If you ever try to send stuff all around the world, and we have an internet platform, not the digital, we have digital distribution, not distribution platform, it makes a lot of other stuff problematic. Not something that can be overcome, but still it's another layer of problems. If you once try to ship stuff all around the world, you don't know what you're dealing with.
They are companies. Yeah. This is a problem, but it can be solved. But the main one is the simple fact that we do not own the IP rights to all of those games.
But it would be a logical step for us.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Okay. I think now we are actually interrupting another meeting. But maybe.
No.
Oh, we also waited them out.
All right.
We are on a roll.
Yeah. I'll ask one more question. I'm not actually sure if you can answer this. This is from Keko Oscar 2. Are you considering collaborating with Ross Scott for the Stop Killing Games initiative, since now the EU petition has surpassed 1 million signatures?
We are slowly getting into this whole topic on Judy. I need to be careful with the answer here. How volatile this whole thing is, and one word, wrong word used, and basically Judy is done.
that's why I said I'm not sure if you can answer this.
But the thing is that obviously we were always about game preservation, right? And we are a European entity. We are a European company, and we have a lot of expertise in this area. We know what are the problems. We know what are the technical problems, the licensing. We know how much work is needed to do certain things with game preservation, because we've been doing that for 15 years. So clearly we have a responsibility in this area, right? And
we've already reached out to the guys behind the Stop Destroying Video Games, the European initiative. So yeah. we had a talk with them. It went really well. We are in talks with developer representatives from the developer's perspective. So we are trying to it's not a middleman, it's not a mediator, it's
advisor.
It's more of a like an advisor role.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's, you know, the topic is very volatile. And we feel that a lot of that comes from the fact that the topic is very, very complicated, and there are many interpretations of what all of that means.
Yeah.
So for sure, one of the things that we are striving to do right now is to build clarity. Because I feel that only with that, this can move forward in a way that will be beneficial for everybody involved. The gamers, developers, the publishers.
Have you had any discussions with any politicians at all about this stuff? Anyone in the high-level government?
Not yet.
I like that you said not yet.
I can say that in Poland, where we are based, the Polish parliament was hearing stuff from the Polish organizations connected to the game developers. So this hearings took place already in Poland. I would assume this will happen also in European level once the initiative will pass through to the commission, European Commission. So yeah, things are happening.
Okay, this will be the final question before I wrap up. I'm going to aim this at you, Peter. Okay, yes. So your late uncle, he co-founded the first PC shop in Lublin, right?
Yeah.
So what is the most?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. What is the most important thing that you learned from him?
That there is a porn in computers. This is a true story. Like my uncle was buying like old computers from Hong Kong and bringing them to Poland, and it was PC XT era, so you had 360 floppy disk, 5.25 inch, and there was this program like a predecessor of Norton Commander called X3. And there, on one of the diskettes, I found a folder called XXX, and I didn't know what that means. I was like 7, 8, or 9, and I asked him and his coworkers, and they went all silent. And without the internet era, like, you didn't have a chance to know what XXX means. But I said, if I found out how to read these files, I'll be happy. And I did. It turned out it was ASCII porn. It was like Hercules graphic card 6.
He taught you an important lesson then. Wow, that's funny. Oh man, that is a perfect way to wrap up. Guys, this has been... this has been a huge pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time out and doing this. And sorry that I kicked two groups of people out of meeting rooms.
We had a blast.
Yeah, we're saying we are sorry a couple of times. Should be a thing.
But all the best with everything. You guys are doing an amazing thing. And just keep going.
Hopefully big news on the 25th of
September.
Yeah. I'll be keeping an eye on it. I want to know what this is. Cool. All right, well, that is the show, everyone. Make sure you share, like, and subscribe, and until next time, stay safe.